Ladies and gentlemen, what are your thoughts about, well, when a person's life isn't its best and maybe they're not that interested in living any longer? The medical professionals, particularly, not necessarily only, but particularly nurses and or doctors helping them die. Well, let's revisit that conversation that we had a while back. Let's see if your thinking on that is evolving. Are you pretty much thinking about it, viewing it the way you were before, or you're still trying not to think about it? Here we go. You know, we talked about the fact that there's some professionals looking at how they can go about helping to extend life well beyond year 100 of life. How many of you decided that, you know, you just don't want to go that far? You just don't want to live that long under any circumstances. Live to be 150, 180. Have you made a decision? Have you changed your mind since you made your first decision about that? Or have you made your decision and stuck with it? You're just not willing to live 150 years or beyond. Well, you know, part of what would make that a go is how they would deal with our bodies, the treatments that they would be providing. And of course, you talk about longevity, extending the lifespan. Well, of course, we have to look at what we can do about the health of the elderly, our senior citizens, even aside from considerations about extending life beyond, well beyond age 100, beyond the age of 150, just living in the 80s, in the 90s. And what will be happening with the health of people living in their 80s and 90s, late 70s? Well, Pew Research has asked some questions about how people view end-of-life medical treatments. And again, this not really having to do with providing any kind of treatment that's for the express purpose of extending life beyond age 150 and those kinds of things that we talked about before. This is just about what the quality of life will be while the person is just living their normal life. This is without any man-made ways of extending life to some super numbers that we're just not accustomed to hearing about. None of that this time. This is just about where we are right now with the typical lifespan and how medical treatment will be handled. Particularly though, and this is why I mentioned the elderly, but we know that the elderly are not the only ones who find themselves dealing with end-of-life issues, end-of-life matters, end-of-life questions. And so that means family members are not the only ones. You know, you're not necessarily going to have to wait until a family member is 95 years old before you have to deal with an end-of-life issue. And particularly from a medical perspective, from a medical treatment perspective. One of the things that they're showing, you know, two big questions that come up are, do you want doctors to do everything possible? Something's wrong with the person and their health has been impacted negatively. Do you want doctors to do everything possible to keep the patients alive? Or do you say, oh, no, there comes a point where medical treatment should be cut off? What are your thoughts about that? Well, at a time of national debate over healthcare costs and insurance, a Pew Research Center survey on end-of-life decisions finds most Americans say that there are some circumstances in which doctors and nurses should allow a patient to die. At the same time, however, a growing minority says that medical professionals should do everything possible to save a patient's life in all circumstances. Do everything possible in all circumstances to save a patient's life. And of course, When we start talking about what we should do, what we should not do, again, we're talking ethics, right? What is the ethical thing? What is the ethical approach? And some people are saying doctors and nurses should do everything possible in all circumstances, while some are saying there are circumstances in which doctors and nurses should allow a patient to die. Now, of course, this is going to be another one of those issues where we're going to really need to think through the matter and not allow emotion to be our guiding force. That doesn't mean we be emotionless. That doesn't mean we pretend like we have no emotional response whatsoever. It just means don't let emotions be the motivating factor. Don't let that be your decision maker. We can experience our emotion and still analyze enough that we can really make an informed decision. When we let emotions run away, it is hard to make a well-informed decision, because emotions running away from us means that our brains and our minds are not engaged enough. We need to put the emotions in check. Don't try to make the emotions disappear. Just hold them in check so that they don't run away with us, so that we don't get out of control and our minds aren't working as efficiently and as effectively for us as they need to be. So emotional response, okay, but within limits. Let's make sure that our minds are working more than our emotions rather than the other way around. When asked about end-of-life decisions for other people, you notice that now, for other people, 2/3 of Americans, in fact, 66%, say that there are at least some situations in which a patient should be allowed to die, while roughly 31% say that medical professionals always should do everything possible to save a patient's life. Over the last quarter century, the balance of opinion has moved modestly away from the majority position on this issue. While still a minority, the share of the public that says doctors and nurses should do everything possible to save a patient's life has gone up 9 percentage points since 2005 and 16 points since 1990. The share of the public that says doctors and nurses should do everything possible to save a patient's life has gone up. Now, I repeated that because I want to ask this of you. I want to ask you this question. Does that come as a surprise to you that with all that we hear about going on in the world right now, that the number of people in America who are saying doctors and nurses should do everything possible in all circumstances to keep patients alive, does that come as a surprise to you that more and more people are taking that position? Or is that what you would have expected? I think I'm kind of considering the fact that we have all of these shootings going on, all these killings, and we still have so many people, not only politicians, but in the American public, who are strongly opposed to gun control. You have so many people in America who are strongly opposed, and not just politicians, but among we the people, who are strongly opposed to having a healthcare system that can provide good coverage for all legal citizens of America. I'm just curious. It's just kind of intriguing to me that although we have so many decisions that say people aren't really concerned about the well-being of the citizenry of America, states where they insist that the stand your ground laws need to stay in place, even though we know a person has been pursued, accosted, and killed in the name of stand your grounds law in Florida. George Zimmerman, pursued, accosted, and killed a young man. And we have people all across the country who are saying, we want our stand your ground laws to remain in place. People are looking for ways to get more guns in more public places. If you have a license to carry, They want you to be able to carry that gun into the churches. They want you to be able to carry the guns into the parks, public parks. Some of them trying to pass laws mandating that every household has a gun in it. Mandating. So that even people who don't want guns in their homes are bound by law to have a gun in their home. It's when I look at all these kinds of issues, it's just interesting to me, it's intriguing to me that we have a growing number of people who are saying everything should be done in all circumstances to keep people alive. At the same time that a lot of people are in essence saying we're not really that concerned about people's lives or their well-being. People are being killed because of the illicit use of guns. And still you have millions of people saying we do not want any controls placed on gun ownership or use. Don't want background checks to be any different than they are now. The uptick comes partly from a modest decline in the share that says that there are circumstances in which a patient should be allowed to die, and partly from an increase in the share of the public that expresses an opinion. The portion that has no opinion or declines to answer the survey question went down from 12% in 1990 to 8% in 2005, and now it stands at 3%. So you see what they're saying there. We're having more people who are saying we need to have a situation wherein medical professionals are always doing everything they can to keep sick people alive. And that number is going up largely because you have fewer and fewer people refusing to respond to that survey question. More and more people are responding instead of remaining silent on that issue. And as they're responding, more and more people are responding, more of those who are now beginning to respond are saying, you know what? Let's keep them alive at all costs. When thinking about a more personal situation, because remember now, before the question was, what should be done when other people are involved, when someone else is the one dying? What should be done? And basically, again, 66% said, at least in some situations, the patient should be allowed to die. 31% said, do whatever needs to be done to keep that person alive. But when thinking about a more personal situation, many Americans express preferences for end-of-life medical treatment that vary depending on the exact circumstances they might face. A majority of adults say that there are at least some situations in which they personally would want to halt medical treatment and be allowed to die. For example, 57% say they would tell their doctors to stop treatment if they had a disease with no hope of improvement and were suffering a great deal of pain. About 52% say they would ask their doctors to stop treatment if they had an incurable disease and were totally dependent on someone else for their care. 35% say they would tell their doctors to do everything possible to keep them alive, even in dire circumstances, such as having a disease with no hope of improvement and experiencing a great deal of pain. Having said that, let me ask you this. What are your thoughts about death? Well, two things that are related, but they are different. What are your thoughts about dying, about you dying now, not someone else? Because that can be a totally different situation, or it can be very similar. But just to make sure we're all on the same page, I'm not talking about someone else right now, I'm talking about you. What are your thoughts about dying? What are your thoughts about death? Well, let me put it this way to make sure we're on the same page. What are your thoughts or concerns about being in the process of dying? What are your thoughts, concerns about being actually dead? They would tell, 35% would tell their doctors to do everything possible to keep them alive, even if they have a disease with no hope of improvement and they're experiencing a great deal of pain. In 1990, 28% expressed that view. That modest uptick stems largely from an increase in the share of the public that expresses a preference on these questions. The share saying they would stop their treatments so that they could die has really remained about the same over the past 23 years. And I know a lot of that has to do with how we view death, how we view dying. And if you will, concerns, fears, comfort level, depending on the individual. All right. Kenny Garrett, sing a song of a song. That's what this one is called. I Shall Return. Stay with me.